I'm Bill Littlefield. Coming up on Only a Game, Major League Baseball's system of recruiting prospects in the Dominican Republic is examined in a new film. But first...
Hey, Billy, I wanted you to see these player evaluations that you asked me to do.
I asked you to do three.
Yeah.
How many did you do?
47.
Okay.
Actually, 51. I don't know why I lied just then.
Not so very long ago, a book and then a movie titled Moneyball celebrated the ascendance of the Oakland Athletics and their general manager, Billy Beane. It seemed that Beane had figured out how to build a winner from parts other teams had discarded. Today, the A's are closer to last place than first and a very long shot to make the playoffs, even with MLB's newly expanded postseason format. It's been nearly 23 years since Oakland last won the World Series. Joining me now to discuss the myth of Moneyball, unless it's more than a myth, are David Haglund, the editor of Browbeat, Slate Magazine's culture blog. Welcome to Only a Game.
Thanks, Bill.
And we're also joined by Alan Hirsch, the co-author of The Beauty of Short Hops, How Chance and Circumstance Confound the Moneyball Approach to Baseball. Alan, welcome to the program.
Glad to be here.
David, I want to start with you. Regarding Moneyball, you have written, quote, "The numbers are good, but the story is still bunk." How so?
Well, what I meant by the numbers are still good is that I, you know, read Bill James growing up, and I followed the statistical revolution in baseball as it was happening, and think James and the sabermetric analysts who followed in his wake had many great things to say, and the Oakland A's were very wise to capitalize on their findings. But the story that Michael Lewis tells is that these findings turned Oakland into a great contender, even though they were spending very little. And really, the truth is that Eric Chavez, Miguel Tejada, Tim Hudson, Barry Zito, these guys turned Oakland into a contender. And they weren't really the product of Bill James-inspired sabermetric analysis. They were generally high draft picks that other teams also very highly valued. And Lewis mostly ignores these guys in his book.
Alan, to some extent, Billy Beane's strategy was based on sabermetrics, the player evaluation measures developed by the Society of American Baseball Research. You said in a recent interview that, quote, "A lot has happened in sabermetrics since 2003 when Moneyball was published." Which among those changes have altered the so-called gospel of Moneyball?
One of the contributions of sabermetrics was to make people realize that the out was undervalued. It's really important when you're at bat not to make three outs, and that was true. But they extrapolated from that that people shouldn't be stealing bases very often. In fact, in the last several years, sabermetricians have reversed course on that. And ironically, we now see Billy Beane, who was celebrated for embracing that insight in Moneyball, now putting a team on the field which is among the league leaders in stealing bases. But I just want to go back to something David said. Moneyball is a great story, but it's really more fiction than nonfiction. And he mentioned several players that Moneyball all but ignores that were really at the heart of Oakland's success. And three of them were starting pitchers who combined for 50 wins and 650 quality innings a season. And Moneyball devotes a couple of paragraphs to them and 40 pages to marginal players who contributed just a little to the team's success, but who fit Michael Lewis's theory nicely.
So any team with Barry Zito, Tim Hudson, and Mark Mulder would have been a pretty good team, whether the general manager believed in sabermetrics and Moneyball or not.
That's exactly right. And look what happened to Oakland after they lost those guys.
One explanation for why Oakland hasn't continued to thrive is that so many other teams have adopted the Moneyball way of evaluating players. Is there any truth to that, David?
I do think that's a factor, but I don't think it's the largest factor. I think that the departure of those players and the team's, you know, perfectly understandable failure to replace stars on that level is really the larger issue.
You know, I'm curious about whether either of you sees any hope for the current Oakland Athletics team. David, you go first.
You know, I think the only hope for them is the same hope that, you know, struggling teams have had for years, which is you need some luck in finding, you know, some prospects through either the draft or foreign free agents that that develop into the kind of underpriced stars that they once had.
Alan, any hope for Oakland in the near future?
Sure, small market teams have succeeded throughout baseball history. Moneyball makes it sound like Billy Beane accomplished, you know, he parted the Red Sea. What he did was he led a small market team to a successful run. He's far from the only general manager who did that.
David, how long do you suppose it's going to be before somebody coins another term to explain why the White Sox or the Nationals or the Pirates have been successful this season?
Well, you know, I'd wonder. I think the term Moneyball caught on in part because Lewis, to his credit, was one of the first big mainstream writers to seize on, you know, these kinds of principles that teams were starting to use. I think that idea is powerful. I think it does still inform what teams do. It's not a magic bullet. It's not going to turn a mediocre team into a great one overnight. But I think that phrase will be with us for a long time, and I'm not sure anyone will come up with a better one.
Alan, what do you think? Is there a better phrase somewhere on the horizon to describe something that's happening in some other city these days?
I'm sure some PR geniuses are working on it.
Alan Hirsch, the author of The Beauty of Short Hops, How Chance and Circumstance Confound the Moneyball Approach to Baseball, joined me from New England Public Radio in Amherst, Massachusetts. Alan, thank you very much.
Thanks, Bill. Enjoyed it.
David Haglund is the editor of Slate Magazine's Browbeat. He joined me from NPR's New York Bureau. David, thank you very much for speaking with me.
Thanks. Great to be here.